On January 20th, over 230 people were indiscriminately attacked, kettled, and mass arrested by Metropolitan Police during an anti-capitalist and anti-fascist march held in opposition to Trump's ascension to power. After being held on the streets for the majority of the winter day without access to medical treatment, bathrooms, food, or water, those arrested, including journalists, medics, and legal observers, were all charged with the same 8 blanket felony charges, and in some cases, even more. After months of solidarity and countless hearings, a couple of the charges have been reduced or dropped. But the government continues to stubbornly pursue the prosecution of almost 200 people, most of them still facing at least 6 felony charges and up to 60 years in prison. Most of the prosecution's case is premised on criminalizing common protest practices, such as wearing the same clothing, chanting, presence of medics and legal observers, and meeting at a predetermined location for a publicly announced march. Despite this, U.S. Attorney Liu, a member of Trump's transition team, is still pursuing these charges in order to deliver a broad blow to dissent everywhere, as well as to avoid scrutiny of the widely condemned, violent, and excessive police behavior during the inauguration that even children, the elderly, and disabled people were not safe from. While the officers that hurt people that day have yet to face any repercussions, our charges are getting underway. And here's what's been happening.
The first of the J20 conspiracy trials resumed on Monday, November 27th. The prosecution continued its presentation of witnesses and evidence, including testimony from employees and managers of businesses in downtown Washington, D.C. area that reported broken windows on Inauguration Day. Despite being in the second week of trial, there still has been no particularized evidence against any of these 6 defendants currently on trial. One may rightfully wonder how a trial could be in its second week of proceedings without direct testimony or evidence against these defendants being presented thus far, highlighting the prosecution's relentless pursuit of these politically motivated charges. Much of the prosecution's case thus far has relied heavily upon police testimony, which has been largely incoherent and not in clear alignment with the state's allegations of conspiracy and related charges. The testimony of the employees and managers seemed to be in line with the prosecution's claims in their opening argument that there was a riot that caused substantial damage on January 20th. While some witnesses seemed disturbed by the events of the day, others seemed apathetic, and some of the witnesses testified to the businesses remaining open throughout Inauguration Day or resuming normal operations within a day or a few days. Notably, none of their testimony was about the 6 defendants currently on trial. A sizable portion of the testimony in the first half of this week came from cops from the Metropolitan Police Department. One cop testified about being part of a civil disturbance unit, or CDU, that was deployed on J20. His unit was involved in kettling the group of protesters, medics, legal observers, and journalists at L Street and 12th Street. He testified that he, quote, held the line and did not fall down when a group of people trapped in the police kettle allegedly rushed one of the police lines surrounding the crowd. Footage from his body-worn camera shows him repeatedly pushing and bashing protesters with his baton while barking commands at them to stay back. Among these people were legal observers and attorneys who can be seen on his body cam footage identifying themselves to police who still refused to release them. He also testified that he saw other police officers deploy pepper spray that day, including from what can only be described as a pepper spray cannon. Yet he also testified that he basically does not know what pepper spray is. One might rightfully wonder how an officer with the MPD is unfamiliar with the standard issue weapon at their disposal, raising questions about the quality of training received by MPD. The next cop to testify was one of the many that day wearing the standard issue yellow MPD jackets that can mount body-worn cameras. His bumbling testimony included embarrassing statements about not knowing who the officials talking over the police radio were, and not knowing how those radio communications related to the orders he received from his direct supervisors. He also testified extensively about how unpleasant pepper spray is, and even admitted that he was hit with pepper spray from his fellow officers on Inauguration Day. Footage shown throughout the case has repeatedly shown officers indiscriminately spraying the crowd of protesters and using the spray to move the group in a certain direction. He said he would love to be able to put on a gas mask and goggles whenever exposed to pepper spray. He also testified that he saw many items on the ground within the kettle, although he did not know who discarded them. He claimed these items included gas masks and respirators, goggles, weapons, and, oddly enough, smooth rocks like you find in a river, not to be confused with city rocks, which, although the officer admitted he is not a geologist, he felt comfortable claiming in court with the prodding of the prosecution. Since he testified that he could not identify anyone in the kettle, we speculate that the seemingly confused cop was busy daydreaming about protesters attempting to balance these smooth rural stones on top of each other to create pretty, serene statues strewn with flowers from riverbanks and meadows. Oh, wait, he was testifying about a police kettle in D.C. in January, where more than 200 people were held for hours without proper medical care after police unleashed pepper spray and stinger grenades on the crowd. Strike that serene image.
Speaking of striking things from the record, testimony from an undercover cop was stricken after he improperly, yet almost eagerly, characterized the march that left Logan Circle as a black bloc. The jury had to be cleared from the room, and the judge questioned whether or not the prosecution had instructed him to use those terms, or if they even bothered to tell him that that term was not to be used. The judge has ruled that this term can be presented in evidence, such as recordings or documents, but that witnesses cannot use it to characterize the events that they are testifying about. Yet the witness repeatedly ignored that instruction. Other terms under fierce debate in this trial so far include anarchist and Antifa. After much arguing between the prosecutor and defense attorneys, the jury was instructed that Antifa is short for anti-fascist or anti-fascism and is being used in this trial as a descriptive term, and that associations with the term should not color the jury's deliberation. An undercover cop has so far testified that he infiltrated a protest planning meeting of around 300 people on January 8th. He testified that he did not record the meeting in any form or focus on anyone's faces while there, but that he had been sent to the meeting to gather information on multiple protests set to occur on January the 20th. Fortunately for him, his recollection of that meeting was supported by a video surreptitiously recorded by another infiltrator, this one from Project Veritas. Yes, Project Veritas, the ultra-conservative, far-right organization that claims to investigate corruption in the government and in the left. The same Project Veritas that was just exposed for trying to do a quote-unquote sting operation against the Washington Post by having a member present a false story about sexual abuse by a congressperson. This disgusting organization, led by James O'Keefe, was the source of a key piece of evidence in the prosecution's case so far. Kirchhoff, seemingly aware of this organization's biases, tried to argue that the source of the video was irrelevant and that it should be kept from jurors. Has anyone heard the classic protest chant, "Cops and Klan go hand in hand"? In DC, it seems like the prosecutors and ultra-conservative, racist organizations also go hand in hand. Perhaps unsurprising, given MPD's track record and white supremacist ties to President Donald Trump. The undercover will take the stand once again on Wednesday for more cross-examination. The case the prosecutor is presenting against these six defendants so far is both incredibly weak and clearly politically motivated. How much more overt can it be than building your case on so-called evidence from ultra-conservative racists, the same racists who stoop so low as to fake allegations of sexual abuse just to capitalize on a moment when survivors of sexual harassment and assault are outing abusers in the government and virtually every industry imaginable? Yet these six comrades are still facing the threat of up to 60 years in prison if convicted on all counts. They are still in danger. A danger that the state has manufactured from the moment the march first left Logan Circle.
Whatever happens in these trials will surely set precedent for future resistance. Trump has wasted no time attacking and violently disrupting vulnerable communities. Trump's attacks on political opponents and foreign leaders are echoed by his increasing attacks on communities of color, Muslims, immigrants, queer and trans people, women, and the poor. And this is only the beginning of his presidency. Resistance will only become more necessary in the future, and we must do everything we can to protect our ability to defend ourselves. Your freedom and future are at stake in this as well. Get informed. Go to the website at www.defendj20resistance.org to get further details on the case and updates as they come out. Spread the word. A lot of people don't know about the case or understand how it's relevant to them. Talk to people about the case and follow at DefendJ20 on Twitter and at DefendJ20Resistance on Facebook for articles and updates you can share with others. Fundraise and donate. many defendants do not live in DC and have to travel long distances to attend mandatory court dates. Every little bit you can donate goes directly towards supporting defendants and fighting for their freedom. Host a fundraiser or ask people you know to donate. Take action. Check out our website for details on petitions, ongoing campaigns, and other ways you can directly help support J20 defendants. But most importantly, keep resisting. Join us in continuing to condemn Trump, the threat that he poses to the entire world, and all of the violent behavior and bigotry he perpetuates and encourages.